This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices. And tonight, Janelle Tortese will continue her discussion with Deborah Bell about the differences between sex and gender. Greg Chapman will be talking with the executive director of Family Pride about their latest activities. Team Houston will talk about what they are going to do to prepare for the upcoming games in Chicago and how you can become a participant. Kenneth Claiborne will be here, and Jennifer Renee will chat with Congressman Barney Frank. Plus, news wrap from This Way Out and music. But first, we go to London and the BBC News.
BBC News with Blair Goga. The United States military in Iraq has confirmed that it has launched a criminal investigation into allegations that American Marines shot dead 15 Iraqi civilians in the town of Haditha last November. A statement at the time said the civilians died in a roadside bomb explosion that also killed a Marine. But an initial military inquiry found that they were shot dead in their homes by the Marines after the bomb attack. Criminal investigators from the U.S. Navy will now seek to establish whether the 12 Marines involved were guilty of misconduct. Our correspondent Jim Muir reports from Baghdad.
The incident happened early in the morning of the 19th of November last year. An American armored vehicle was hit by a roadside bomb, killing one Marine and injuring two others. The military report at the time said that insurgents then opened fire from all directions. There was a firefight in which eight of the attackers were killed. It said the 15 dead civilians, including three young children, died in the initial blast. But relatives, survivors, and doctors who saw the bodies say that's not true. They said they died when Marines burst into their houses and shot them dead in their nightclothes. There have been many allegations from Iraqi civilians that similar behavior by U.S. troops has caused numerous civilian deaths in combat situations, especially during the offensives at Fallujah and elsewhere.
In the United States itself, more than 50 anti-war protesters were briefly detained in Washington during a demonstration to mark the third anniversary of the American-led invasion of Iraq. Another protest was held in Ohio, where President Bush delivered a speech defending his policy in Iraq. Mr. Bush said he understood why some Americans had had their confidence shaken, but he insisted progress was being made in the fight against insurgents. About 1,000 demonstrators in Belarus are holding a second night of protests against the election victory of President Alexander Lukashenko, who they accuse of rigging the vote. A BBC correspondent at the rally says so far there is no sign of any force being used against the demonstrators, but he described the situation as tense. Earlier, the United States backed the opposition's call for new elections, and the European Union said the poll had taken place in a climate of fear. But speaking to the BBC, Sergei Kasyan, a government supporter and member of the Belarusian parliament, dismissed the criticism.
Neither Mr. Barroso of the European Commission nor the European Parliament are in a position to make these kinds of pronouncements, let alone the U.S. State Department. They are baseless. Let them put their own house in order. They're trying to make everyone in the world live according to their norms and principles. Well, their principles are not for us Slavs. We say this openly, and we will continue to say so everywhere and fight for our rights by all means.
The Mexican government has taken out a full-page advertisement in leading newspapers in the United States, calling on American legislators to include Mexico in finding a solution to illegal immigration. The advert, which appeared in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, and the Washington Post, comes ahead of a debate in the U.S. Senate on a bill to extend a border wall between the two countries. Mexico is opposed to the bill and is seeking support across Latin America. You're listening to the news from the BBC. The Russian President Vladimir Putin is in China at the beginning of an official visit. The two countries are expected to hold talks on forging closer energy, trade and military links. Kemin Grammatikas reports from Moscow.
Today, where Moscow and Beijing see their interests intersecting, they are cooperating as never before. Russia has vast resources, China has a hungry, booming economy. First and foremost, it's energy China needs. Russia has huge deposits just across the border in Siberia. This time, the two leaders will discuss plans for new oil and gas pipelines, more coal and electricity supplies, and more cooperation over nuclear power. Last year, Russia and China held their first ever joint military exercises, and they're looking to repeat those this year.
The German government has launched a campaign to lure East Germans who move to the country's western states back to their home regions. Hundreds of thousands of East Germans have moved west since unification in 1990, many of them young and well-educated. The Minister for Eastern Regeneration, Wolfgang Tiefnesse, launched the new scheme in the city of Magdeburg and promised free tickets for theater performances or sports matches to those willing to return. Serbia and Montenegro has officially withdrawn from this year's Eurovision Song Contest amid a row about whether a Serbian or a Montenegrin group should represent the federation. In a statement, Eurovision said the state broadcasters in Belgrade and Podgorica had been unable to reach an agreement. The Eurovision Song Contest will be held in Athens in May on the eve of an independence referendum in Montenegro. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
And welcome to the March 20th, the first day of spring edition of Queer Voices. On tonight's show, we have J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Greg Chapman, Jennifer Renee, and me. I'm Deborah Bell. And we're going to continue our discussion with Janelle Tortorese. She joined us last week, and we were talking about some of the differences between what is sex and what is gender. And Jennifer, I think you had
my favorite is that, you know, sex is between the legs and gender is between the ears.
So it's your mind is one aspect. I've always maintained that a person's how they identify gender-wise has aspects of psychology, physiology, biology, and spirituality.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
But what were some of the things that you said influenced how a person was determined to be male or female?
Okay, well, we talked last week a little bit about the hormonal influences, first of all, the genetic basis, but how that really isn't even as important as the hormonal influences that occur prenatally as far as differentiating the gonads and then the morphological outward appearance of the genitalia. So that was a little bit of what we touched on last week, as well as talking about some of the prenatal hormonal influences that can influence someone's, if not gender identity, at least there's something that the researchers call childhood non-gender conformity measures. So they sort of ask people to reflect back on their experiences of childhood, and there seems to be some association with some prenatal gender, prenatal hormonal events, and some of those things, as well as a connection between memories of childhood nonconformity as far as gender role expectations and adult sexual orientation. So there is sort of that connection as well.
Has there been anything that they've seen in these studies and the like that has to do and affects sexual orientation?
Prenatal influences affecting sexual orientation? Yes. Actually, there's quite a bit of evidence that shows that for some people, sexual orientation, and I personally believe that what caused one person's sexual orientation isn't necessarily what caused another person's, even if they're the exact same orientation. So I think that there's multiple.
So just like there can be different factors that go into how a person identifies by gender or maybe determined sex, there can also be different reasons a person's orientation is same sex, I don't like to say opposite sex, other sex, or both, because, you know, as many people that would like to disclaim the term of bisexuality, it does exist, so.
Right. I think, you know, it's of course, researchers have looked more extensively and more long-term at gay males, because men tend to get a little bit more of the research attention. But, you know, and there's some studies that show that for some gay males, there's a genetic link to that in their families, between them and their brothers, and between them and their mothers as well. Now, that recent study.
On 60 Minutes recently, they featured a thing, and they said one of the things that they found is that the more older brothers a man has, the more likely he is to be gay. Now, of course, there's people that are only children or only have one brother or no brothers, but...
Right. Well, that would be an example. I think for some people, there's a genetic component. For some people, there's no genetic component, but there may very well be this association between having older brothers. The population incidence of being gay, we like to say, is 10%, but I wish it was. it's really closer to probably 2-4% for males, and it increases that 2-4% by a factor of 30% for every older brother a male has.
And I believe that you had indicated there was a biological reason for that.
Yes, whenever a woman is pregnant with a son, someone who has a Y chromosome, she produces basically an antibody to some of the hormones that the Y chromosome.
Because
produces.
She's a double X, so a Y is a foreign body
right,
to her.
Right. So, and that stays in her system, and so with each successive male child, that accumulates, and so it's thought that maybe having, you know, reaching a certain, with more and more accumulation, it's more and more likely to influence a fetus in some way by influencing the brain development that would later influence sexual orientation.
What about transgender stuff?
Well, you know, there's that's that, of course, you know, males are studied more than females, and then and then transgenders are way down there on the bottom, but you know,
the bottom feeders.
No, what? We're no longer silent, though.
No, thank goodness. But no, there has been some research, and I think linking prenatal hormonal influences with transgender identity really hasn't been done yet. I actually did a study trying to link something that was shown in both men and women to be linked to sexual orientation. That was a marker of prenatal testosterone levels, and that's the digit ratio that became pretty famous about 5 years ago or so. The way it was reported in the popular media was not exactly the most accurate, but there is a link between levels of testosterone prenatally and how the fingers grow. And there also seems to be a link that prenatal level of testosterone that's indicated by the fingers seems to also correlate with sexual orientation for some people. I did a study where I surveyed female-born or female-bodied transgendered individuals, and I found absolutely no link with that gender identity and their digit ratio. Their digit ratios were on average no different from a heterosexual, typically gendered woman. So.
Yeah, I think one of the mistakes that's made is the assumption, again, falling on stereotypes, that gay men are effeminate,
right,
and that lesbians are masculine. And we know, because we're active in the community, that there's a range of people, and there's people who there's two men who both may seem effeminate who are together, and there's also very butch men that are together, and every variation that one could think of. So that again belies the stereotypes of what this dichotomy of male female.
Right. Right. And yes, absolutely. And sexual orientation, I was talking before about there's actually a pretty strong correlation between recalled gender nonconformity childhood behavior and sexual orientation. But at the same time, it's not a perfect correlation. It doesn't work for everybody. And as you said, gender and sexual orientation can be completely different. There are, you know, I'm probably not saying anything that's really revolutionary to anyone, but there are female-to-male transsexuals who are attracted to males, and there are male-to-female transsexuals who are attracted to women. And I was actually having a conversation with someone recently, and they were saying, well, you know, I used to not understand why a male-to-female transsexual who was a lesbian after transition, why they would go through that. Why not just stay a straight male who can be with women. And, you know, it's sort of, well, that it's two different
issues.
It's
the dress.
It's the
clothes.
It's one thing to be a man with a woman, but it's another thing to be a woman with a woman. And it's beyond the bedroom as well. Your gender identity is not just...
Right. Just
you
as
know.
Your sexual orientation. Our identity as gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people is in every room of the house and the whole world beyond. So what are some of the distinctions that can be made between sexual orientation and gender identity in related terms?
Well, I think for me, and this is opinion really, but the intersection between the two is that I really think that sexual orientation is in its own way a transgendered category, because to be attracted to transgress my gender boundary, where the expectation is I'm supposed to be attracted to men, and instead I'm attracted to women, that transgresses gender roles, gender expectations. And so in a lot of respects, that is a transgendered act, transgressing that gender. And in addition to that, I think the root of homophobia is rooted in gender, because there is that stereotype that you were talking about before of the feminine men and the butch masculine women. And so there's sort of that connection in people's minds that leads to homophobia of sexual orientation and gender.
I think it's much more rooted in misogyny.
And
that we live in a society where the female is despised.
That's why gender roles are so policed.
Right.
Because to uphold that power structure.
Well, so someone told me once is that you have to know what gender someone is so you know who gets paid less.
Sad but true.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah.
And
let's not go there.
Okay. and it's interesting because people that they don't necessarily know how to act, and we've all known people that where it's the bathroom issue. Oh. Which bathroom do they use? And there's women that are totally women that still may look masculine, and they get that challenge of, oh, I think you're in the wrong bathroom. And they go, like, no.
Yeah, often at the very least, just the stares and the double takes. And at worst, you know, what are you're in the wrong bathroom. What are you doing here, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know some women that have actually had the police called on them.
Yes, so do I.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, of course, it certainly happens with transgendered women. They're, you know, it is something that is faced.
Until you get your, you know, gender marker change, which is a whole different legalistic problem. Until you do that, you can and will be challenged, even if you've had the reassignment surgery. Because, you know, very rarely do they do a physical check on you in the bathroom.
I don't care who's in the bathroom, as long as they're there to do whatever business they need to do in the bathroom like everybody else. You know, if they're not there for anything funny business, then, you know, it's fine. We can all be like Allie McBeal and have
co-ed bathrooms.
One of the things we talked about, we were talking about in the uterus, how the different hormone levels, and you end up with a male body and a female brain, and we went over that. What about the intersex child?
Okay, well, that is as varied as there are, as many variations of that as there are intersex individuals.
What does intersex mean?
Intersex is it's a relatively new term chosen by a group of people themselves for their own identity, and it's been put in use to replace the medical terms hermaphroditism and pseudo-hermaphroditism. I always think it's important to honor what a group chooses to call themselves, and it certainly is a better term and less, it has less association to it, I think. And generally, intersex individuals result from a variety of different conditions that you have a child that is born with ambiguous genitalia. And obviously, you can't ask the child, well, do you feel like you're a man or a woman? Are you going to grow up to be a man or a woman? And so, you know, the traditional thing that has been done with these children, and it's always been, just as you were talking before about misogyny, it's always been very penis-centered. It's, okay, well, is this, you know, if this is a boy with a too small penis, well, he's just going to be traumatized all his life to have such a small penis. So, you know, we'll have to fix that. And then, you know, or is it a girl with a large clitoris? And so it's just sort of looking at that aspect. Because the tissue is homologous. So the tissue that develops into either the clitoris or the penis is really just dependent on the levels of hormone that are present, levels of testosterone that are present prenatally during the stages of development.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have intermediate levels of those, then you can end up with a huge variation in the genital appearance. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, doctors most often used to just tell parents that they should basically assign the gender as female, have surgery, corrective surgery, many corrective surgeries, in order to make the genitals appear female and raise the child female and never tell them and, you know, completely repress the whole thing. And you know,
there was an assumption even in the medical community that the genitalia is what identified someone as male or female.
Right.
Well, but there were studies, as bad as they were, saying that gender had nothing to do with the sexual organs. It had to do with socialization.
Right.
And for many years, it didn't matter what you surgically altered the baby, as long as you raised it as whatever you made the genitalia,
and
it was going to be whatever it was.
And the reality is that there's been some disastrous results from that very thing.
Very wrong.
Unfortunate cases.
Yeah, and so what, you know, the Intersex Society of North America, ISNA, is a very great organization, I think, that really has a lot of education and reaches out. There, you know, it's estimated that there's about one in every 2,000 births that occurs with some degree of ambiguous genitalia. So that's not an insignificant number. So, you know, and there's an advocation going on for leaving the genitalia alone and letting there be a little bit of development, giving the child, you know, some freedom to express themselves as they end up choosing to, you know, and letting them have a little bit of room to grow.
Mm-hmm. I had understood that if you were to take any child, normal or ambiguous genitalia or whatever, and just let them be themselves for a period of time, that they'll tell you, they'll exhibit whatever gender they are.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree. I personally think that our gender identity formation begins before we're born, and I think it continues being shaped by our experiences as we grow up and what we're allowed to do and what we're not allowed to do. But even when things are repressed, you know, for instance, a good friend of mine was her tomboyishness and masculinity were extremely repressed her entire life. Well, 45 years later, she's still who she is. I mean, so it was tried to be, you know, it was tried to be put out of her by her parents and other members of society.
Again, socialization.
Right, right. But it didn't take. So, yeah, people
so
tend to be.
So it's all about us each finding the way to be who we really are.
Right.
Oh. And but we have just about a minute left, and we didn't even touch on the whole issue of transgendered and what that means and the different variances of that. So I'm going to probably have to invite you back, Janelle, and we'll delve into that more. Is there something you'd like to say before we close?
Well, I did just want to say, just because of where our conversation was ending, that at the same time, even while, you know, I personally think that there's a biological predisposition for gender identity for most individuals, but there are others who would disagree, and I think it's important to allow room for that as well. There are people like Judith Butler and then Ricky Vilches, who's written a lot off of Judith Butler in relation to transgendered individuals in particular, where they talk about gender as kind of a drag that we all do, no matter what our gender identity and our life experiences are, that it's something that we, in a lot of ways, consciously choose to do every day. And there should be room for that as well. There should be room for anyone to be able to play with gender the way they like to without it being judged.
Thank you so much.
And now we're going to go to News Wrap from This Way Out.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Czech same-gender partners prevail over a presidential veto. Advocates sharpen their legal tools against youth-targeted quack cures. And laughing and benefiting with comic Poppy Champlin. All that and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Charles Hall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 18th, 2006. overriding a presidential veto, the Parliament of the Czech Republic has approved a law legalizing same-gender partnerships. 101 members of the lower house, the minimum number required for the override, voted this week to grant gay and lesbian couples rights comparable to heterosexual marriage in health care, inheritance, and child rearing, but not adoption. It was the fourth try for activists pushing the bill, which enjoyed the enthusiastic support of Social Democrat Prime Minister Jiří Perubic as it passed the lower house in December and the Senate in January. When President Václav Klaus of the right-wing Civic Democrats vetoed the bill in February, calling it an excessive intrusion into private life and an affront to the traditional family, its supporters took to the streets of Prague. Public opinion polls found most Czechs favoring registered partnerships, and Perubic called the veto one of Klaus's worst errors as president. Although the veto was overturned, the new law is expected to be a key issue in June elections there. While some activists admitted that the law was a compromise, Gay and Lesbian League spokesperson Martin Stracone told Agence France-Presse that it made gays and lesbians normal members of society. Noting that the Czech Republic is now the second post-communist country, after Slovenia, to recognize queer families, Patricia Prendeville of the International Lesbian and Gay Association Europe said, "We believe the Czech example will help other post-communist countries to overcome prejudice toward lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people and demystify the myth that LGBT rights are decadent Western values."
Australia's Immigration Minister Amanda Vanstone announced earlier this month that her government will recognize the same gender partners of skilled migrant workers who want to move there. The decision means that queer couples will be able to stay in Australia as long as one partner has the right to work in the country. Same-gender couples were previously forced to apply for visas separately, while heterosexual couples were automatically allowed joint entry into the country. According to a spokesperson for Vanstone's office, "The fact that couples were not treated together in the same application created some uncertainty for them and a potential loss for Australia of highly skilled migrants. This change will remove this anomaly."
A topless woman bather and two men kissing in a park are featured in a film that will be shown to prospective immigrants to the Netherlands. They'll then have to pass a 15-question entrance test in Dutch, covering the language and culture of Holland. Those who pass the exam will be required to complete two citizenship tests during the next 5 years. All this according to a report this week in the London Times. But Muslim leaders in Holland say the film is offensive. "It really is a provocation aimed to limit immigration," said Abdou Menebi, the Moroccan-born director of an organization that helps new immigrants settle in the country. "It has nothing to do with the rights of homosexuals," he continued. "Even Dutch people don't want to see that." However, Jeroen Dijsselbloem, a socialist member of the Dutch Parliament's Immigration Committee, said that the film had been created to help prepare would-be immigrants for the country's open-minded attitudes on issues such as homosexuality. "We have lots of homo discrimination," he said, "especially by Muslim youngsters who harass gay men and women on the streets. It is an issue here."
As Shiite and Sunni Iraqi Muslims move closer to civil war, the country's most influential Shiite cleric, Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, has reportedly issued a fatwa calling for genocide against Sunnis and death to all homosexuals. On his website, used to communicate with the dominant Shiite masses throughout Iraq, Sistani specifically urges his followers to kill gays and lesbians in the worst, most severe way. Speaking on behalf of Outrage, a British queer advocacy group, exiled gay Iraqi Ali Hilli told reporters, "Evidence we have received from our underground gay contacts inside Iraq suggests intensified homophobic abuse, threats, intimidation, and violence by fundamentalist supporters of Sistani," adding, "He gives the killers theological sanction and encouragement."
Meanwhile, the head of New York City's St. Patrick's Day parade, John Dunleavy, compared gays and lesbians to prostitutes, Nazis, and Klansmen, and defending the ban on the Irish Lesbian and Gay Organization, or ILGO, from marching under their banner on March 17th in what is reportedly the largest such parade in the world. The annual display down Fifth Avenue, organized by the Roman Catholic Church-based Ancient Order of Hibernians, was ruled a private event in previous court decisions Republicans upholding bans on self-identified queers, marching in both New York City and Boston parades. If an Israeli group wants to march in New York, do you allow neo-Nazis into their parade? Dunleavy asked in an interview with the Irish Times. If African Americans are marching in Harlem, do they have to let the Ku Klux Klan into their parade? If we let the ILGO in, is it the Irish Prostitute Association next? Newly elected City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, the first open lesbian to lead the council and herself an Irish American, boycotted the Manhattan March after failing to persuade the Hibernians to lift their ban. Of Dunleavy's comments, she told the Daily News, "They're so outrageous, I don't even think they dignify a response." "Welcome to pure, unadulterated homophobia. It's not pretty, is it?" said Alan Van Capel of the Empire State Pride Agenda. "It's shocking that Mr. Dunleavy hates gay people so much. What have we ever done to him?"
As if the Bush administration was running short of national security-related embarrassments, it became known this week that late last year the U.S. president approved changes to the rules governing security clearance eligibility, changes that may make lesbians and gays vulnerable to discrimination. In 1997, guidelines established by the Clinton administration said that sexual orientation may not be used as a basis for or a disqualifying factor in determining a person's eligibility for security clearance. That specific protection was missing in an 18-page document distributed December 29th without public notice. The revised guidelines say that security clearances cannot be denied solely on the basis of the sexual orientation of the individual. Under the old rules, sexual behavior involving a criminal offense, an emotional disorder, the potential for coercion, or a lack of judgment were considered causes for concern. The new rules approach the matter from the other direction, saying that sexual behavior that is strictly private, consensual, and discreet could mitigate security concerns. Subtle distinction, to be sure, but as Steve Rawls of the Service Members Legal Defense Network pointed out to the Associated Press, in the law, subtlety can have even unintended major consequences. Suspecting more insidious intentions, Human Rights Campaign President Joe Solmonese said that the new rules again raised questions about this administration's commitment to fairness and equality and called for an immediate public explanation of why the changes were made. Veteran activist Frank Kameny, who organized protests against the anti-gay and lesbian security clearance policies in the pre-Stonewall era, told the Washington Blade that he felt the current changes are not significant since the old safeguards are still in effect. But Rob Sadler of Federal Globe, an organization representing queer federal employees, expressed concerns about the ramifications of the new language in a system that sometimes traps gays and lesbians in a catch-22 situation.
The Right Wing American Family Association, or AFA, has reinstated a boycott intended to stop Ford Motor Company from advertising in publications aimed at queer readers. This week, the AFA, in coalition with what it said are 18 other anti-queer groups, announced that they're reinstating the previously threatened and then withdrawn boycott, claiming Ford had reneged on an agreement to stop funding homosexual organizations and activities and advertising in homosexual media, AFA Chairman Donald Wildman said in a statement. But Ford plans to continue advertising in the queer media. "We've always been open to dialogue," company spokesperson Kathleen Vokes told the New York Times, "but our position is that we will continue treating all with respect."
And finally, a gay male couple in Massachusetts is recovering nicely from their shared surgery. In what's believed to be the world's first husband-to-husband transplant, Bill Mokler donated his kidney to Paul Sagan on Valentine's Day to liberate him from the dialysis machine he had relied on since 1998. Mokler had to give up painkillers for agonizing arthritis prior to the surgery, but he told the Boston Herald, "The pain I endured was nothing in comparison to what Paul had to endure with his kidneys." At last reported, there have been no complications from the surgery as the couple recuperates at home with their two dogs and cat. Samia Bashir of the U.S. equality group Freedom to Marry said it is fortunate for these men that they live in Massachusetts and are legally married. Conservatives can hopefully look at this case, she said, and see that we are real people and see that the level of commitment we have to each other is no more and no less than any other couple. Mogler discovered in October that he was a good donor match and told Sagan that he had a present for him on their first wedding anniversary. Sagan said, I was expecting a DVD or some clothes.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 18th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Lucia Chappelle and Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Charles Hall.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
This is Queer Voices.
Hello, this is Greg Chapman, and I'm going to be talking with Jennifer Crislin, Executive Director of Family Pride. Jennifer, are you on the line?
I sure am, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Very good, thanks.
I'm so glad you've joined us tonight.
I'm so pleased to be here.
For those unfamiliar with Family Pride, can you tell us what your mission is?
Sure. We are the only national organization exclusively dedicated to securing equality for LGBT parents and their children.
And what's going on now? What are the hot issues that Family Pride is paying a lot of attention to?
Well, clearly the biggest issue and the most serious threat right now to our families is this increasing wave that we are seeing of anti-LGBT adoption measures that are being considered and filed in many states across the country. There is a concerted and strong effort by our opponents on the right to find creative ways to limit our ability to be families. And so we've been working very hard to defeat those bills and to educate the public about why they're bad.
You might be interested to know that the Houston Chronicle actually had an editorial on the front page Sunday about that very issue.
That's terrific. Did they editorialize in our favor?
They did.
Well, that is what we are seeing, interestingly enough, in papers all across the country. As a matter of fact, in Massachusetts, my home state, where my partner and I used to live and where we were able to legally marry, Catholic Charities has made the decision to cease placing foster children who are available for adoption with gay and lesbian parents rather than comply with the state's anti-discrimination laws. And universally, they were denounced by conservative and liberal papers and the media across the board.
It is rather hard to understand how someone can think that having a child in foster care is somehow preferable to a family setting where they get, you know, they get health insurance, inheritance.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me.
Daily love.
Yeah, although I debated Paul Cameron just last week, and that's what he actually said. It would be better for a child to be in an orphanage than it would be to be raised by gay or lesbian parents, which I just found shocking and appalling. And I think the good news is that most fair-minded Americans, and I think the majority of Americans, don't agree with that assertion at all. What I think is more conflictual for many, many people is, what is the best environment for a child? And we certainly hear many people on the other side of this issue say, well, really what's best for a child is a mother and a father. It's not that, you know, there aren't circumstances under which a child might not end up with that, but of course what is best for a child is a mother and a father. And the reality is what is best for a child and what scientific research has shown over the years is loving, stable home environments where parents or a parent are deeply invested in the outcome for their children.
Yes, and of course, you know what's interesting about that? If you take the approach that you just said, you can pretty much guarantee that the child is going to be in a healthy environment. But if you reduce it to characteristics or attributes like just having a man and a woman in the household, that is certainly not a guarantee that the environment is going to be healthy.
Not at all. I think, you know, we've seen plenty of history that a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, a mother and a father, don't always do the best by their children. And that's not to say that there aren't hundreds of thousands of really amazing, well-qualified heterosexual parents out there in the country, but that is not the determination of what makes you a good parent. What makes you a good parent is love, patience, guidance, investedness, stability, a willingness to take your children for who they are and make them the best they can be in the context of what they have available to them. Those, to me, are the recipes for success as a parent.
One of the conclusions in the Chronicle editorial, I thought, put it very well. It said that at the heart of family law is to make a determination on what the best interest of the child is. And it finished off by saying, as it turns out, children have more urgent concerns than what occurs in the bedroom.
And isn't that the truth? Yeah. I mean, if you talk to children in the foster care system, what they want is what they call a forever home. And to them, that is not about a mom and a dad. It is about a parent or parents who love them and who are going to keep them permanently and forever.
Do you think part of the issue is that people who are on the other side of this issue are concerned that if they allow adoption and foster parents, they're somehow validating eventually the idea of same-sex marriage?
I think what they're most concerned about is that having happy LGBT families out operating in the world, raising their children, getting involved with PTAs, serving on school committees, going on field trips, will show the world what is really the truth, which is that LGBT people are just as competent, just as loving, just as wonderful a set of parents as heterosexual parents are. So I think that's their first concern, that when people know us and see us and see us with our children, we are not so scary anymore.
Right.
But I do think that marriage and children are very inextricably linked in many people's minds. And so for them, it's really conflictual, this whole idea of what is marriage, what is it about having children. And the right takes advantage of that and uses that in its quest for political power.
Jennifer, this is Deborah Bell, and we had a constitutional amendment on our ballot this past year that we were fighting, and the biggest reason that people had for saying that they did not think that there should be same-sex marriage was because having children, because only men and women can have children.
Yes,
and they said it over and over again, like they couldn't get beyond, you know, that idea, and I'm a mom myself. I had my children, you know, the old-fashioned way. and that's true of a lot of GLBT families. We had children, or we come into same-sex relationships with children already in the mix. How does family pride work with those families?
Well, it's interesting, and you're so right, Deborah. Our children come to us in a whole variety of ways. There are many, many people who were married, had children, came out, got divorced, came out, but there are children in the mix. And then there are other families who are adopting or fostering. There are other families like mine who are creating their children through donor insemination, or for gay men through surrogacy. I think the job that we have to do at Family Pride and in our movement in general, we have to help people understand that the definition of family is not a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, a mother and a father, and 2.5 kids and a dog out in the suburbs with a white picket fence. Less than 25% of families today in America fit that description. There's only 25% of our nation's children are being raised by a married mother and father.
There's a lot of children that are being raised by grandparents.
That's right. You know, in Arizona, they just filed a bill that would require that married men and women are the first choice for adoptive placement for foster care kids. You know, 72,000 children in Arizona right now are being raised by their grandparents. Overwhelmingly, single parents are more likely to adopt from the foster care system special needs children and hard-to-place children. So you know, families come in a huge rainbow of diversity in terms of their size, their constellation, how they came to be. What I think is most important about a family is that they love each other, they support each other, that they worry about each other and provide all the supports and systems that can possibly put into place to make them the best that they can be. And the reality is 75% of this population, children are being raised in those alternative families.
I'm curious, are GLBT persons, are they more likely to adopt hard-to-place or special-needs children or children who are older or of different ethnicities?
Well, it's hard to know from statistical analysis because the way that adoptions are tracked through the Child Welfare Services agencies is as single parents. But we do know that a huge proportion of the single parents that are adopting from foster care are actually gay parents. And yes, they are overwhelmingly more likely to take special needs kids, hard-to-place children, children with medical needs that are beyond sort of the norm. So, and that's because for a long time, that was how we created our families. That was an available option for us before reproductive technology had come quite so far. But, you know, we're taking hard-to-place kids out of foster care systems. We're taking healthy newborn infants out of private adoption placement agencies. You know, we're getting pregnant through donor insemination. You know, we're getting married, having our children, and coming out afterwards. So we really bring kids to our families in a whole variety of ways.
I know quite a few people who have nieces or nephews that they have adopted.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's super common. And, you know, I think many siblings will name as guardians for their children in the event of an emergency, a gay or lesbian brother and sister. You know, even that right is under attack in some states. In Tennessee last year, there was a bill filed that would make it illegal for a person to name in their will a gay or lesbian person as the guardian of their child in the event of a couple's death.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's the most outrageous kind of behavior. And they seriously get up there and argue that this is somehow in the best interest of a child, that a child would be better off going into state care than to be placed with the aunt or uncle that they may have known their entire life because they happen to be gay or lesbian.
Well, there's also that the whole thing behind it is because they're afraid the children will be gay or lesbian.
Right.
If they're raised by gay and lesbian parents. And, of course, our joke always is that, well,
we're kind of raised by straight parents.
Yeah.
Most of us were.
Yeah. You know, and that should be a concern anyway because, you know, there's that label that somehow it's bad or wrong and that's why
they
feel that way. So what are some of the things that Family Pride is doing legislatively?
Well, we have been working on these adoption bans that have been popping up across the country in different states. We work to, one, mobilize our grassroots membership. We have over 35,000 people across the country, gay parents mostly, but also allies, friends, family, non-parenting LGBT community members who understand that parents have a really important voice in the civil rights movement. We've been mobilizing them to reach out to their state senators and their state representatives. We've been working on a national public education campaign called Real Families, Real Facts, where we've been working to place into the media cycle actual parents telling their true stories about who their families are and why discrimination hurts them. We're actually convening in May at the University of Pennsylvania hundreds of academics who have been doing research on LGBT-headed families to talk about the newest and most cutting-edge research that's out there on our families. And in Texas, in October this year, we're hosting the first of its kind, a national LGBT family conference where youth and parents from all across the country are going to come to be trained as leaders, to do activism in their home communities, to help educate the public in as many ways as possible about what the truth is about LGBT families, and that is that we're no different than any other families out there.
And where is that going to be in Texas?
In Dallas.
And what's the date, October?
October 27th through 29th.
And if people are interested in getting involved with that or attending, is
just come to our website, which is familypride.org, and click on the event ACT OUT, the National LGBT Family Conference.
Well, that's great. That's good to know that there's something coming to our state.
Yes. Well, we really felt like it was incredibly important. You know, it's so easy to think that gay families are only being raised in New York or L.A. or Boston. You know, there are huge numbers of gay families being raised in red states and rural places in the South. And it's really important that, one, we support those families who are raising children in less conducive environments in terms of the political atmosphere, and two, that we show the world that, yes, even in Texas, even in Dallas, there's a huge number of gay parents raising children.
I am curious what the latest has been on the White House Easter egg hunt.
Well, the good news is that just last week, the White House released the procedures for how the egg roll was going to happen, and nothing has changed from last year. So we are good to go. We're very excited about it. We have over 225 families now registered for the egg roll. And I think it's going to be a great opportunity to showcase for America who our families are, and that we, like them, love participating in great American traditions.
And, of course, the issue is that, with that, in case people don't know, is there was some complaint about GLBT families participating in the Easter egg roll hunt. And that had actually occurred previously.
Yes.
So this wasn't the first time.
Of course not. I think gay families probably have been going to the Easter egg hunt as long as it's been in existence, but not as an organized group. So that was what seemed to cause all the concern.
What are the best ways for someone to get involved with your organization? Is it to go to the website
There's two things that folks can do. The first, and they both involve going to our website, but the first is to come to our website and sign up to get our action alerts, which will keep you informed about what is happening nationally for LGBT parents and on issues of family recognition, but it will also keep you connected to what's happening in the states. We are lucky to have close relationships with many of the statewide organizations, including Equality Texas, and we know, for example, that there's a very strong likelihood that in Texas again in 2007, there will be a bill filed to ban LG and B people from being able to foster and adopt. So if you want to keep in the loop about what's happening, by signing up for our action alerts, you can do that. And the other is you can click onto our local parenting groups page, and we have in states and in local communities the list of who your local parenting group is so that you can get involved at the local level and really be involved in what's happening in your own particular community.
So you can help families and local areas connect with each other.
That's right, because it's so important for families to have support of one another, for our children to know other children who are growing up with two moms or two dads. So we think that's a really important part of the equation.
Well, thank you, Jennifer, for joining us on Queer Voices and all the work that you're doing with Family Pride.
No, thank you for having me, both of you.
Yeah, thank you.
Good to talk to you.
Take care.
You too.
And we are on Queer Voices, and we want to send a shout out to our friend Ray Hill. Ray underwent surgery recently again. He suffers from diabetes and has had to have amputation due to complications from that. But you can't say he's back on his feet, but he is back out and about and doing his damnedest as is his way. That's why we love him. And he will be at the Unitarian Fellowship at 1504 Wirt Road on March 19th at 11 a.m. To do his presentation of To Thyself Be True, which is an autobiographical account of his personal journey through faith from being a teenage Baptist evangelical to an atheist, GLBT, and prison activist.
Wow, what a journey.
Yeah.
Can't miss that.
No. And Saturday night, I stopped by the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Community Center fundraising bingo. It was Brokeback Bingo. It was a sight to behold, let me tell you. And who knew? Who knew that what would get queers out to do something on a Saturday night was bingo? But everybody, I mean, the place was packed, and they were having a great time, and I think they're going to be doing that monthly. So you want to get your dauber ready, because you get to play bingo now.
So were there plenty of cowboys there?
Oh, yeah, some very cute ones. Some Cal Dykes, and there was Jerry Simino was dressed as Annie Oakley, and that in itself was worth seeing. So it was, you know, it was good to see people out having a good time raising money for a good cause. So it just goes to show if there's something to be done, there's a queer doing it somewhere.
And so where's the bingo again?
Well, they've been having it at 1415 California, and they have the club there smoke-free during that time, and they have the official, you know, all the bells and whistles. It's an official state-sanctioned bingo game. People win money, and like I said, it helps a good cause. So stay with us on Queer Voices. We're going to go to some music, and we'll be back to talk to the folks from the Gay Man's Chorus.
And that was Somewhere Out There and Somewhere Over the Rainbow, delightfully done by the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston. And we'll be back to talk with them, or at least one of them, after the break.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt, and the rest of the Queer Voices crew.
If you're glad to be gay, sing if you're happy. This way.
This is J.D. Doyle, and Deborah Bell and I are here to talk with Kenneth Claiborne of the Gay Men's Chorus. Welcome, Kenneth.
Thank you for having me.
What is your position with the chorus?
I'm the associate conductor for the chorus.
Does that mean you're conductor, so you don't sing? You just tell them to sing?
Actually, I do sing. I conduct and sing. Last year, I was accompanist, but I sing mostly.
And what brings you to our show tonight?
Well, actually, I'm here to tell you about our 70s Fever concert. The Bayou City Performing Arts organization has three concerts a year. The second concert of the year is a great concert that we like to bring in our audience. And this is the perfect concert to do it. It's the 70s Fever. It's going to be all of the fun songs from the 70s, your TV theme shows, your sing in the shower songs. We've got a great disco era that's going to have you just dancing in the aisles.
I see the list of some of the artists: Carpenters, Queen, Barry Manilow, Eagles, Donna Summer, Patti LaBelle, Carol King, Gladys Knight, Village People. That's 70s.
Queen, yeah. We've got, yes, you can get your Gladys Knight roll on. It's going to be absolutely wonderful.
Now, Queen, that's pretty intimidating stuff to tackle.
Well, actually, and we are having a wonderful time doing it, but we believe that everyone's going to have a great time.
Which Queen song are you doing?
We are doing Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh my. Of course.
Yes.
Oh my. You are very brave.
What else could they possibly have done?
The soloist is very brave.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My.
So how long has the Gay Men's Chorus been in existence?
This is the 26th season for the Gay Men's Chorus, and as you will probably know, for a nonprofit organization, that is a long time to be in existence. And Houston has a very vibrant and welcoming arts community, and we've been very fortunate to represent the GLBT community in the Music Arts Society in Houston.
And it started off as the Montrose Singers, is that correct?
That is correct, and they performed at the Old Tower Theater. I may be dating myself here.
I remember that.
Yes.
We're all dating ourselves.
Yes. I got nobody else to date. No.
But they started in the Old Tower Theater section, and they also performed with the Houston Symphony in the early years, and has since then branched to over 100 singers under the direction of Artistic Director James Knapp.
Mm-hmm. And this past year, something new and exciting started happening with Bayou City Performing Arts with the addition of a sister group.
Yes, we are very excited, and also the women are very excited. We've added the Bayou City Chamber Choir, which is a women's chorus, and they will be performing their first full concert also in June. Some of our listeners, or your listeners, may have heard them perform at their initial performance at our Christmas concert, but we're very happy to have the women along with us.
Are they going to be taking part in the 70s Fever?
Yes, they're going to do a great Carol King set.
Oh, good. Apropos. Another thing that's kind of intimidating.
Yes, but the women are handling it quite well, and they are growing, and they are sharing the camaraderie as we do in the Gay Men's Chorus.
How many women are actively performing?
I believe there are around 50 and growing.
How many? 50?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. This would be your first or second
this
concert?
Would be the second concert. So
that's pretty
the
good
word
50
is out.
Already.
Yes. We're very excited, and so are they.
And how many in the men's chorus?
We will sing about 100. We will vary between 100 and 120. 25, since we are a volunteer organization, with three concerts a year. But we will average 100.
So you have this one coming up March 28th.
Yes.
And where will that be?
That will be at Jones Hall downtown in the Theater District, our new performing venue, wonderful Jones Hall. And we're just excited to be there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Jones Hall.
You performed there before?
We performed our Christmas concert. That was our first performance, moving from the Wortham.
How did you land Jones Hall?
Well, a lot of great connections, and we know that Jones Hall is an excellent place for music in the city, as the Wortham, but we're very happy with moving to Jones Hall.
Didn't Jones Hall have to have some reconstruction done on it after Allison?
Yes, I believe all of the lower areas, and they have done a magnificent job with Jones Hall acoustically and aesthetically, and we are just happy to be there.
I hope they put in some more women's bathrooms.
I think they did.
Just speaking on a practical basis, that was one of the few reasons I didn't like to go there, was because the configuration was very inconvenient.
And I believe you had to go down a long flight of steps.
Right, exactly.
You have an event coming up in June that's even grander?
Yes, we are hosting the Turtle Creek Chorale, which is the famous choral department out of Dallas, Texas.
A very well-respected
Very, very well-respected choral organization, and we're very excited to have them down for our Turtles on the Bayou section of our seasonal
presentation. Okay, so we've got bunnies, and now we have turtles.
Well, we're very well-rounded here in Houston.
Yes.
Is this the first time the two choruses have performed together?
Actually, it is not. On last year, we were guests in Dallas, where we got to sing at the wonderful Meyerson Symphony Center.
I was going to ask if there was turnabout.
So
there.
This is almost a turnabout, and we are just excited and ecstatic to have them come to our
center. So what did you learn from that event?
A lot of things. let's see. We can start with just the exposure of being in such a great hall. We learned a lot from a large choral organization, as we are still an upcoming choral organization, and they are almost settled, or should I say quite settled. There were a lot of educational things to learn, brotherhood things that we learned. Just a wonderful, yes, a wonderful weekend in Dallas.
Now, you're with us tonight because the director, James Knapp, could not be with us because he's conducting rehearsals
as
for the upcoming concert.
Yes.
This one sounds like it's going to be kind of a fun evening. Well, it's not going to be kind of a fun evening. It's going to be a blast. A blast from the past, as they say. And then the June concert will be a more formal event.
Yes, we do three concerts a year. The middle concert, the second concert, is usually the more lighter concert, the concert where we try and involve our audiences a little bit more. Of course, the first concert is our holiday concert, and then our prime concert in June. So this concert is really where we're going to bring our audience members literally on the stage with us.
Oh, not me. Not unless it's dancing. I only do dancing. No singing for me.
I was wondering if the June show was more formal as far as music, but looking at the listing of composers, not necessarily.
Well, we're going to cover a great area.
Yeah.
Cover a great area with the June concert. A lot of Copland. We're going to do a number of wonderful composers. Again, that being the more formal of the concert. A little bit of Dallas, a little bit of Houston, so it's,
but it mentions a dash of the musicals, the recent musicals Wicked and Avenue Q.
Mm-hmm.
So not so formal all the time.
Well, not so formal all the time. We won't be formal this time. As a matter of fact, we're leaving the tuxes in the closet for the 70s show.
Oh,
so
of course.
It's
yeah.
just going to be a fun time.
Got your platform shoes out.
Platform shoes.
No, those are dangerous. You fall off of those. But I'm sure there's going to be some interesting outfits.
We are encouraging everyone to come out in their best 70s attire and just join us for a wonderful evening of
fun.
Oh, there will be a lot of surprises along that line.
Now, there's the chorus has three CDs available. One is Grateful, which is holiday selections.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's the first one.
And some really beautiful music. Last week we played When You Meet an Angel and Mosaic.
Mosaic.
Which is, it was done live in Montreal?
Yes, when we went to Gala Choruses, Gay and Lesbian Association Choruses, we took the music from that concert and combined it with a previous concert material and came up with a beautiful collage of music.
And then the newest is 25 classic Cole Porter songs, Red Hot and Cold.
Oh, that was the concert. A lot of listeners may remember the Red Hot and Cold concert, which was also the theme for the silent fund, fundraiser, a silent auction fundraiser we just had. But we decided to put that on CD since it was such a wonderful show and we had such a great response from it.
Is there any effort made to highlight the work of known gay or lesbian composers?
Yes, we do try to do that. Arrangers and composers include all in our community. So we, in our strive to achieve musical excellence, we incorporate all of the arts, all of the composers, whether they are gay, straight. Everyone can bring something to the table.
Is there any effort to find lyrically gay music for a men's chorus to sing?
It sometimes poses problems.
I hear a lot of chorus CDs from all over the country, and that really isn't done very much. I wish it were.
You've got music out there. You've got arrangers out there. And I believe it is a part of our job to bring this to the forefront to the best of our ability.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you want people to know about this next event?
We want them to know that they can come out to Jones Hall midweek and have a wonderful time remembering all of the songs that they weren't sure of all of the words to, but all of those shower stall songs and all of those singing going down the road songs. This is just going to be a wonderful time.
This is
time.
Tuesday the 28th. That's
Tuesday
a week
28th.
From tomorrow.
It's, yes.
It's
right
time to boogie, baby.
And we still have great seats. Tickets as low as $15. And you can find us or find more information about us at www.BayouCityPerformingArts.org. Or you can call 521-SING, S-I-N-G, for more information.
Yeah, 713-521-SING.
Yes.
And thank you so much, Kenneth, for being with us on Queer Voices, and we look forward to the Boogie Fever.
It's been a pleasure being here.
The voice of
with Queer Voices.
And now we're going to go from the world of performing arts to the world of sports.
Yahoo!
We're so diverse here on Queer Voices. We have Keith Wright. Kenneth was with us earlier.
Yes.
Keith Wright and Raul
Martinez,
who's they're with Team Houston, and what is Team Houston?
Well, Team Houston is a nonprofit, a 501c3, with kind of two missions. It promotes gay and lesbian sport groups around town, and it also organizes the Team Houston contingent that goes to events like the Gay Games and the World Out Games that'll happen later this summer.
So you're the Gay Games are happening in Chicago, and that's what has long been called the Gay Olympics, but the word Olympics wasn't allowed to be used, so they called it the Gay Games.
Yes, apparently back in 1982.
And why is there now also another event that's going to be taking place in Canada? Is it a competing event?
Well, originally the Gay Games were awarded to the city of Montreal, but as they got closer to the event, they couldn't agree on there were some differences and couldn't agree on a final contract. So the Federation of Gay Games moved the Gay Games to Chicago, and Montreal said, "Well, we'll put on our own event. We'll call it something else." And so the first World Out Games was born.
So they're within a week of each other.
They are. If we survive the drama of this year, we will have doubled the number of gay and lesbian sport events that happen, and they won't happen in the same year after this.
Well, do tell me, what do you mean by the drama?
Well, just the drama of, you know, it was supposed to be in Montreal, and then they, you know, 1 week apart and really competing for athletes.
For example, Sydney, the Gay Games in Sydney, it was easy for a lot of the, all the teams like from Team Houston, Washington, D.C., all throughout every nation, you know, that had a team. It was easy for them to send a delegation to the Games.
So we, Team Houston, went to Sydney?
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm curious, for the teams that were in Sydney, is there a split between Chicago and Montreal, or is Montreal creating maybe new groups that otherwise weren't there before?
I think a lot of the city teams are, like Team Houston, we're supporting both. We've got athletes going to both. I'm certainly going to both.
Oh.
Some of the other city teams are doing that, or in some cases, there's more drama and they're split, and some, you know, going to one or some going to the other.
And it's not like the Winter Olympics and Summer Olympics that are sponsored by different big corporations. Most of this is the teams themselves or the individuals themselves that finance the trip, right?
Yes, absolutely.
That's correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so how many different kinds of sports teams are there in Houston?
Well, we have everybody knows about the big four or five: softball, volleyball, bowling, tennis, and the three billiards groups. But what a lot of people don't realize is that we've actually got about 25 gay and lesbian, GLBT or friendly sports groups, and there's even more, you know, women's groups that are out there. Things like running and cycling, soccer, rugby. A fun one that joined us last year for the Pride Parade was the women's roller derby.
Roller derby, go figure.
Oh, they were great.
And swimming.
That's a new one. It was born not about a week and a half ago.
Oh, my. It is very new.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the one that I've been hearing a little bit about, and that's Cheer Houston.
Yes.
Can you tell me anything about that?
Yes, absolutely. We, someone after the Pride Parade last year said, you know, gosh, if only we had a cheer group. That's really my sport. And I said, well, Team Houston, we can make that happen. So we've made it happen. We've got about 15 people on our Yahoo group, and a smaller number make it to our practices. But basically, yeah, it's cheerleaders and gymnasts and several brand new people, you know, just out there practicing.
How did some of these groups come about?
They were an interest, and people just said, you know, I want one, or I want to do that. That's my sport, and there's not a gay and lesbian group.
Did the Futures Conference have something to do with it? As part of the agenda?
It certainly did. One of the things on the Team Houston helped write Chapter 10 of the Gay Agenda, which was the output of the Houston Futures Conference last year. And Chapter 10 is our sports and our sports desires for the future. And one of the things is we said, you know, there's a lot of interest, and one of the saddest things in the world is for 300 people to be sitting around Houston going, if only they had X, you know, whatever that particular sport is. Well, you know, we can make that happen.
If you just say it and make it so.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, this year, how many Houstonians do you think will be participating?
Oh, for the gay games and the out games, we expect to have probably between 200 and, if you include spectators, probably closer to 300 Houstonians going to one of the events, or some people are going to both.
If someone is interested in getting active in one of the GLBT sports groups, how do they do that? How do they contact you?
The easiest thing to say over the radio is, use Google. Our email address is pretty easy, too. Send an email to our mailbox. It's gaygamesteamhouston@yahoo.com, and someone will help direct you. We've also got the a Yahoo group called the same thing, Gay Games Team Houston, and the links section has a is open to the public, and it has all the 25 or so links to the 25 or so gay and lesbian sport groups around town.
What are some of the reasons that someone who has interest in sports, mm-hmm. or athletic endeavors would want to do it in a GLBT environment instead of just joining some regular group, some other existing program? What draws people to?
It's more fun. It is.
Raul says it's more fun. And why? You're a runner.
I'm a runner.
And you're involved with the front runners.
That is correct. It's just being able to hang out with the people that you know. People that you can talk freely with. Again, it's being out.
And I do know that, you know, for a lot of athletes, there is a lot of homophobia. There's a lot of issues there for straight athletes who don't want to be with gay athletes, especially in the locker room. I mean, there is that phobia that goes on.
Oh, yeah,
and
you go again.
Yeah,
the locker room. No telling what might happen. You might get a towel snapped at you.
Right.
Now, here's something that I think is a wonderful sport that a lot of people may not think of as a sport, and that's dance. And I believe we had some gold medal winners from Houston in the dance category.
Mm-hmm.
That is correct.
Was that in Sydney?
Sydney.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Sydney, and also Amsterdam before that in 1998.
And I'm blanking totally on their names. That is so rude of me.
Was it Lee?
Lee, yes.
Lee something, I don't...
Yeah, Lee and his partner.
Yes.
And they also, I think, did a little bit of dancing prior to one of the gay men chorus presentations.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
No, I didn't know.
They did a... I don't know what you call it. It was just like they danced before the singing, and that was several years ago. Gosh, I can't keep up with it all anymore.
So what other sports does Team Houston excel in?
Well, We talked about swimming. That's brand new. We've already got, you know, it's a week and a half old, and it's already got 30 members that are interested in the Yahoo group. Oh, it's great. There's a new badminton group and Cheer Houston. There's a basketball group that's out there. Golf is just about to be born.
I was wondering about that.
I've got about 20 or 30 email addresses, but
to tell you the truth, uh-huh. golf makes me ashamed to be Scottish, but I know some people are really into it.
I'm surprised I don't see weightlifting on here, given how many gay men I see at the gym.
Well, it's not that they're not out there, but we just don't have a group yet.
Yeah,
right.
Maybe they hadn't thought of it, that they could be a group and go and do the weightlifting.
But we have had representation in Sydney. There was physique participants.
Uh-huh. That's what they call it, physique.
Physique,
ooh.
Right.
And I know that in the winter, do they have the ice skating in the summer games?
No.
Because they've had figure skating before.
Do they have figure skating?
In gay games. Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing that.
Got the brochure here. I'll look it up real quick.
And a lot of the people, they're not people that have continually played sports. They may have played sports when they were younger, and some of them are just getting back into, because they had that love of sport and the team, the spirit, like you said, of being the camaraderie. Different levels can... Mm-hmm. start, and you may not be ready right now to go to the games this summer, but by next summer, mm-hmm. you'd be ready.
And I'm curious what other events are coming up besides the games that people can look forward to.
Here locally?
Yes.
Locally, the Pride Run is coming up in June 10th.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have not been active and want to start training, April is the month to start training for the Pride Run.
Mm-hmm.
You have about 8 to 10 weeks to practice, train up to the distance.
Yep, and a number of the other sports groups around town are having competitions and tournaments and things. The Lone Star Classic. Right. Softball people, Memorial Weekend. The bowling people have something in July, the name of which escapes me.
I'm pretty sure the volleyball people are having something too, because we had them on recently. And then you have April 1st from 1 to 4, an event at Resurrection MCC.
Yes. There's a guy named Sanford Smith, who's the Key Cities manager with the Gay Games. He's going to be out here this last week of March, conducting a bunch of events, promoting the Gay Games. And Team Houston is going to be holding an event at Resurrection MCC. That's Saturday, April 1st, from 1 to 4. We'll have several of the sport groups out there promoting things. Certainly Sanford will be out there talking. And
so that's another way, if people want to get involved, they can come and
absolutely
get information, meet other team members.
Yes.
And
find out more about it, what's happening on the, you know, just around town, what's happening with the Gay Games, what is Team Houston all about.
What if you like sports but you really don't like to play? How can you get
you
involved?
Just like to watch.
Yeah, you just like, yeah, you're a watcher. How can people like that get involved?
Lots of ways. Almost all of these groups do need volunteers, the sport groups around town. Certainly Team Houston is looking for some volunteers to help us make Team Houston happen this summer. You know, we're picking out our uniforms, we're trying to, you know, get organized for the Pride Parade and other events that are going on, the Pride Festival. We're going to have several booths at the Pride Festival this year. We're definitely looking for sponsorships. Businesses can sponsor us, at the bronze, silver, or gold level, and, you know, get their name out there. Just lots of groups, lots of ways.
Well, we've been talking to Keith Wright and Raul Martinez of Team Houston, and they're going to be participating in the Gay Games in Chicago in July, and also World Expo in Montreal. They have a whole list of teams and information, mm-hmm. and you can go to their Yahoo group again at
Gay Games Team Houston, all one word, and that's our Yahoo group.
And that's the way, or just Google Team Houston, and I'm sure you're going to find it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks for being with us on Queer
sure.
Voices.
Thank you, Deborah.
I'm an older woman now. It doesn't mean that I am dead. More than anything, it means I'm more alive inside my head. I'm not talking ethereal, because we're physically bred. I can talk to you in circles, and I can talk you into bed. 'Cause it only gets better, and it only gets smarter. It's sweet and it's sexy, it's softer and harder. And it's all about the comfort, and it's all about the dare. So I'll take you anytime, anywhere. I'm a married woman now. It doesn't mean that I am blind. There's so much more to see, but only one to take the time. I'm talking fidelity, 'cause we're physically fine. I can talk to you in circles, and I talk because you're mine. 'Cause it only gets better, and it only gets smarter. It's sweet and it's sexy, it's softer and harder, and it's all about the comfort, and it's all about the dare. So I'll take you anytime, anywhere. It's softer and harder, and it's all about the comfort, and it's all
all about the care. So I'll take you anytime. If you take the time, time takes a turn. I'm a different woman now, 'cause I'm no longer aloof. More than ever when you touch me, well it sends me through the roof. I'm talking ecstatically, 'cause we're physically fit. I can talk you in circles and you can talk me into bed. 'Cause it only gets better and it only gets smarter. It's sweet and it's sexy. It's softer and harder and it's all about the comfort and it's all about the dare. And I'll take you anytime. I'll take you anytime. I'll take you anytime. Anywhere.
This is JD, and that song was Anytime, Anywhere, the title track from Tret Fury's latest CD. Next, stay tuned for This Way Out for a report on issues involving gay teens.
When you're a gay, lesbian, bi, or trans teenager, and your parents are forcing you into some kind of supposed reparative therapy, the sense of utter helplessness can be overwhelming. Most queer or supportive adults feel pretty helpless, too, when they hear the horror stories about five-year-old children being subjected to phony cures, about teens being dragged off to questionable camps, about young people committing suicide because they fail to change. And according to a recent report issued by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Policy Institute, the danger is growing as the ex-gay movement increasingly targets youth. But the advocacy group Lambda Legal is proving that young reparative therapy victims and their families are not helpless under the law. Lambda's deputy legal director Haley Gorenberg discusses some of the strategies they could pursue.
In our legal advocacy in our cases, Lambda Legal puts special emphasis on protecting the rights of young people. And we want to help victims of so-called ex-gay or reparative therapy providers and to prevent more harm to young people in the future. And there are several ways that we as a legal organization and advocacy organization can work to do that. And here are just a few of the ways that we've given significant thought to here, that given the right facts and circumstances can be used to fight ex-gay programs and conversion therapy practitioners who harm their clients. If these services, programs, and practitioners are doing something, providing some kind of service that has contours for which licensing should be required, and you would look here to the professional standards and the legal context usually of the state in which they're practicing, they could be forced to stop providing those services if they're unlicensed. If you look at the definition of what needs to be licensed and what these folks are actually doing, line those up, and some of that is already happening. There are some mainstream malpractice theories for medical practitioners and also connected to medical type or supposed therapeutic type services, theories of informed consent that's required before somebody is subjected to treatment. And if these programs are acting outside of the bounds of recognized therapeutic treatments and causing harm, there could be a failure that could be actionable there. Depending what people sign when they enroll or enroll their children in these programs, or what kinds of claims or representations are made to them, the promises and explanations of, you know, what will happen to their children if they complete these programs, there could be standing to sue under a contract theory, because the substance of the contract is either improper or these services certainly are not delivered. And depending on the consumer law, here again we would look to the law of the state or locality, but depending on the consumer law in the jurisdiction, there could be standing based on a claim of consumer fraud or something like false advertising. And if the program or service, is it all tied up in any kind of insurance scheme or making insurance claims or any kinds of reimbursements? And there may be particular requirements that one can analyze to see whether they're really properly meeting the requirements for these reimbursements, what it is that's being built to insurance, and we read the fine print, we look at what they say that they're doing and what should be covered under these programs, and there may be fraud there as well. And also, there are certain aspects of a locality's child abuse or child neglect laws that can be applied, depending how those laws are written, to programs that essentially have custody of children and then have to safeguard their well-being and not do anything that's abusive or neglectful by, for instance, you know, posing a risk of imminent harm to these children's health. Often, since these types of programs are so steeped in religion, many of them, we'll hear the question about, you know, a sort of religious defense or, you know, don't these programs have a religious protection to do what they seek to do? And I would say to that, you know, I'm a big fan of the First Amendment. I truly am. But religion provides no cover for adults who actively hurt young people. We at Lambda Legal, you know, want to talk to young people and to families who have been through these kinds of experiences, and we currently have a toll-free number that we instituted to make our services fully available, including to young people who might not otherwise be able to reach us, which is 1-800-LGBT-TEEN. And we've tried to get that around, make sure that folks know that that's a way to reach us toll-free.
That was Lambda Legal's Deputy Legal Director, Haley Gorenberg. Again, Lambda's special toll-free number for LGBT youth is 1-800-LGBT-TEEN.
Listen to J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, the fourth Monday of every month. It's an award-winning part of Queer Voices on your listener-sponsored KPFT at 90.1 FM and on the web at kpft.org.
And this is J.D. live, specifically to tell you about next week's Queer Music Heritage. It's a very special show called Those Singing Drag Queens. I'm going to start tracing in two parts, March and April, tracing the history of drag queens who really sang, starting with the 20s, ending up around Divine.
For the rest of your life, never make a straight woman your wife. So from my personal point of view, get a real dyke to marry you. If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a straight woman your wife. So from my personal point of view, get a real dyke to marry you.
A straight woman will make you feel small and very often cause your downfall. Once you marry her, then she starts to do the things that will break your heart. But if you make a real dyke your wife, you'll be happy for the rest of your life.
A genuine dyke will not miss men and want them back in her life again. If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a straight woman your wife. So from my personal point of view, get a real dyke to marry you.
And put your heart in this doomed romance. You are likely to lose your mate. Take it from me, don't tempt fate.
If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a straight woman your wife. So from my personal point of view, get a real dyke to marry you.
Hey girlfriend,
woo-hoo.
I saw your wife.
That's right.
She's so dyke.
Isn't she? Now we're gonna be together. Till the end of time.
If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a straight woman your wife. So from my personal point of view, get a real dyke to marry you. If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a straight woman your wife. So from my personal point of view,
get a real dyke to marry you.
That queer take on an oldie but goodie is an unreleased track by Estrogen. Continuing on the lesbian lighter side, Poppy Champlin is a breakthrough stand-up comic who's appeared with big-name stars like Ray Romano, Bill Maher, Brett Butler, and Richard Belzer. An alumna of Chicago's Second City comedy group, Champlin is wowing audiences with what critics call her high-power energy and New York savvy. This Way Out correspondent Chris Cecile got behind the stage act to find out more about the funny and the serious sides of this rising star.
Do you get very politically active, like either in your act or outside of your
act? Yeah, I guess in the act it does. It is starting to get a little, you know, there's a big chunk, you know, kind of in comedy shows you do chunks.
Right.
You know, like they'll do my old stuff was very much into drugs and alcohol and rock and roll. So there's a big chunk of that. But I guess I sort of outgrew it finally, which took a long time. And so then there's a big chunk of relationships and how lesbian relationships are so... Very have to process everything and, you know, takes a long time to get one. And so then there's kind of that, and then there's relationship stuff, and then there is a political chunk.
It's kind of hard to stay away from that these days, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And then there's, of course, the whole sexual... You know.
Woohoo!
Yeah, you gotta have some sex in
there. Make sure the audience is awake after politics. Cause it,
exactly.
You know, funny or not, politics does tend to bore some people.
Yeah, not mine. This is raucous, man. My stuff is pretty... You won't fall asleep during me.
Excellent.
Yeah.
But what do you think? I mean, you know, while we're on the politics, what do you think of George Bush? Do I have to ask her?
No, you don't have to ask. I think he's mentally retarded. And you know, of course, you know, all governments, all of our presidents are, you know, somewhat of a puppet to everybody else behind them, and it's just sad, man. It is really disgusting, and I'm feeling it. With the corporate takeover, I mean, I feel it. I don't know if you feel it, but, you know, AT&T and Chase and Citibank and, you know, Mobile, I mean, and AOL, they're all just such huge conglomerate corporate things, and I feel like they're actually just now, they're because of him, they're able to squeeze people and make, you know, it's getting pretty scary, I think.
Is it scary because the vice president is wielding a weapon?
Yeah, and not only that, but that he doesn't even have to actually point at the target, just sprays it, and, you know, whatever's in the way, you know, that's free game.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, a heartbeat or two away from having his itchy trigger finger on the big button.
Yeah, exactly, right? Oh, and the other thing was, you know, he said he was sorry, but in one breath he said he was sorry, and then in the next breath, when the guy had a heart attack, he said he knew a good taxidermist, so, you know. It's like, where is his mind, really?
And I'm getting fatter. I can feel it already. And I'm embarrassed at the pool. I mean, not bad. Last year, I was really fat. You know, at the pool, and the bathing suit, you buy the bathing suit. It's embarrassing buying a bathing suit, isn't it? Last year, I couldn't get the one-piece, two-piece. No, I had to buy the three-piece. You know, the three-piece, top, bottom, and the curtain that goes all the time? Yeah, yeah. Jesus, I'm empty. Wait, what time's the puppet show? What time's the puppet show? I'm like, I'll show you what's under the big top. Back off! Yeah. Yeah. I'm serious, man. Those curtains are dangerous, too, aren't they? When you're swimming, because it floats on top of the water. You're swimming and you're sucking in your curtain at the same time. Oh, my God. I was in deep down. I caught a fish in my curtain. I couldn't believe it. And I'm fat and I'm pissed I ate it right there. I'm gonna...
Let's switch gears here. I want to talk about the Dinosaur Weekend that you're doing in March, the beginning of April there. This is something you're doing in Palm Springs.
Right.
I'm fascinated by the cause that all these proceeds are going to.
Isn't that great?
It is the Gay and Lesbian Elder Housing Project.
Exactly. This is the second benefit I've done for them, and I just think it's a great, you know, I mean, so, like I said, relationships are hard, and so, you know, what if your girlfriend breaks up with you when you're 65, and, which, you know, it does happen, and then you need someone to take care of you, or whatever, and this gay and elderly housing is just, like, fantastic, it's just, and they're going up everywhere, you know, which is, you know, great.
That's good. That's awesome. You know, we do have an aging population all over the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we're starting to get into the age where people who started coming out, you know, the gay rights movement, these people are starting to get older.
Right.
What are we going to do with our old folks?
Exactly.
So I just think that that's awesome. You're performing with Paula Poundstone?
Yeah. I sent you the flyer, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Good.
You ruined my... Everyone thinks I'm knowledgeable. Now you ruined that.
Oh, sorry. I'm so excited to be performing with her.
Yeah, good. She seems like she would be a riot to perform, or to see perform, let alone perform well.
Oh, yeah. She's really, really great. I really have always admired her from the beginnings of my comedy. You know, she was already out there, so I really liked her.
That was comic Poppy Champlin chatting with our correspondent Chris Cecile. Again, Champlin will soon be performing during the Dinosaur Weekend 2006 in Palm Springs, California.
Isn't it amazing what a person could do with a record collection and a good ear for innuendo?
And our Nurse Pimento, a.k.a. David Fradkin, collected some very queer examples indeed.
The girl that I met.
I'm not going with you.
Why, no?
You have to stay here with Barnaby. You're married to him.
Yay, love, with your heart I will play, love.
I remember that once when I slept with a girlfriend, I had a strong desire to kiss her, and that I did do so.
Men, 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 men.
Bessie and all of us went to the party. Some woman has a house there, buffet flat.
As a lady is our neighborhood.
You can own this unique half-hour collection of queer words and music from days gone by as our thanks for supporting This Way Out. Log on to thiswayout.org to get your copy of
Stranger Than Straight.
Right, right.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Charles Hall, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, and Chris Cecile contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle. David Brown sang Teen Freak, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history, music, and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KRFC, Fort Collins, Colorado, MVS Radio, Amsterdam, the Netherlands, WEOS, Geneva, and Ithaca, New York, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
that Nomalee Brennett is one of my favorite transgendered artists, and I featured her on my Queer Music Heritage show that aired in November on TG Music. And it reminds me that all of those shows can still be heard at queermusicheritage.com. They're all archived there. And I plan my shows quite a ways ahead of time. For May, I have an interview coming up with Farron, and here's a piece of music by her. Farron with My Girl. I really love her version of that. Okay, gang, who do we have to thank tonight?
Well, we're not going to thank Congressman Barney Frank because once for the second time in a row, he has managed not to call in, so we played all of This Way Out. But thanks to Janelle Tortorese for her conversation about sex versus gender.
And Jennifer Chrysler, Executive Director of Family Pride.
Kenneth Claiborne for the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston talking about their upcoming event on March 28th.
And Keith Wright and other members of Team Houston about the upcoming gay game.
Thanks for listening, and please join us next Monday for Queer Voices. Let's see, the Houston Pride Band will be here, and they're going to talk about their upcoming concert on April 1st.
All of them will be here?
We don't have enough room in the stadium, but a representative or two.
Okay.
Yes, someone representative of the band. They're going to be presenting Music and Laughter, the Universal Languages, and they're going to have a special guest MC, Nancy Ford.
That's right ahead of Queer Music Heritage next week.
Yes.
Did I mention that?
No, I didn't. I was going to mention that. And you know what it's about?
It's about those singing drag queens.
Now, if you can't name three singing drag queens, you need to listen to the show for sure.
Thanks for listening to Queer Voices. I'm Deborah Bell.
I'm Greg Chapman.
This is Jennifer Renee.
Katie Doyle.
Good night.
And Glenn Holt. You've been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Mark your calendars. KPFT's Volunteer Appreciation Party will be on Friday, April 28th at 7 p.m. at KPFT, 419 Lovett Boulevard. In honor of Pacifica Radio's 57th birthday, we would like to thank all of our wonderful volunteers for putting in countless hours for the production of KPFT and its shows. Everyone is welcome to join the fun, meet new people, and most importantly, thank our outstanding volunteers. So come on down to KPFT on April 28th at 7 p.m. for this volunteer appreciation party. This is KPFT Houston.
Ma come farò senza più amare? Ma come farò senza baciare? Ma come farò a non farmi tentare?
What passes for TV journalism is almost painful.
Celebrity gossip, weather dogs, and trivia make up a lot of newscasts.
So why not turn off the 10 p.m. news and turn on KPFT for real issues that matter to you?
On Mondays at 10, focus on personal growth with Nellie Chappelle White, alternates with community programming, street talk, and Keys to Freedom featuring guests and your calls.
At 10:30, stay tuned for the Atheist Hour.
Tuesdays at 10, catch Alfonso Rivera bringing you Latin American music and culture in the all-Spanish Son Pacifica.
On Wednesdays at 10, hear international perspectives on Arab voices.
Thursdays at 10, learn more about gender, ethnicity, and other topics on Sister Space.
And on Fridays at 10, the prison show takes calls from the families of those that are incarcerated.
All this, weeknights at 10, right here on commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacific.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.